Welcome to the Earth First Update, bringing you all the environmental news you can use for over 20 years. I'm Uncle Dennis here in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org on Thursday, January 18th, 2018. I'm asking you to please have a pencil and paper handy so you can take down names, addresses, emails, web pages, and phone numbers so you can take action for the environment. Let's start with announcements. Here's an update on the Earth First Winter Rendezvous in southern Mississippi from the Earth First Journal. Greetings and a happy Gregorian New Year to all. An autonomous group of Earth Firsters has been busy all winter long searching for a small corner of Swamplandia deep down in the dirty Gulf South that might be willing to host the finest gathering of scumbags to ever assemble. Since like 7 months ago, and to our surprise, we did manage to find the perfect place. Rural and accessible, beautiful and wild, amphibian and terrestrial, noisome and moist. From the wetland bayous of the Gulf Coast, we are excited to invite Earth Firsters and like-minded accomplices from all the corners of Turtle Island to join us for the 2018 Winter Rendezvous and Organizers Conference, February 23rd to the 28th. This year's gathering is taking place in an occupied Choctaw territory, roughly 70 miles east of New Orleans. The event will begin with a winter rendezvous on Friday the 23rd, which will last through the weekend. The rendezvous portion of the event is open to anyone who shares affinity with the Earth First movement and or its guiding principles of biocentrism, deep ecology, and direct action. Of course, this means law enforcement and similarly positioned or opinionated persons are not welcome. The weekend will be filled with workshops and panel discussions featuring local organizers and community leaders from across the Gulf South, as well as skill shares and trainings on topics like mutual aid disaster relief, fighting toxic prisons, practicing good consent, climbing on rope, and many more. On Monday, February 26th, we will begin to transition into the organizers' conference portion of the event. This half of the gathering is intended for folks who are involved in movement organizing work and who want to spend several days meeting and discussing the finer points of improving on that work. We are still in the process of setting the agenda for the organizing conference and welcome suggestions and requests to byobef@riseup.net. The organizers' conference is designed for a much narrower audience than the winter rendezvous, meaning we expect that there will be many folks who will only attend the rendezvous portion over the weekend and head home sometime on Monday the 26th. We will be camping about a dozen miles upstream from the Gulf Coast itself, but tragically this nearby coastline was colonized and adulterated long, long ago. The land was stolen by white supremacists, also known as capitalists, and used as a slave trading cotton plantation. Then in the early 20th century, the plantation was converted to a luxury hotel with an accompanying golf course, which was then replaced in 1979 by a 2,200-acre highly toxic titanium dioxide plant operated by the chemical giant DuPont. This intertwined history of structured domination illustrates why we refer to the Gulf South region as the belly of the beast. Here's another fun fact. Over 80% of all U.S. pipelines terminate along the Gulf Coast between Houston and New Orleans. This region is home to more oil, gas, and chemical refinery infrastructure than anywhere else on the planet Earth. Yet even here, the industrial capitalists remain unsatisfied. We are inundated with new infrastructure proposals every year, including projects like the recently permitted Bayou Bridge Pipeline, the tail end of ETP's Dakota Access Pipeline system. In sum, the belly of the beast is where we must fight to prevent the Gulf Coast from developing into the world's largest toxic sacrifice zone. So if you love singing in the sun as much as you hate crying in polar vortexes, at least that's what we all assume y'all must be doing up there, then please join us in the Gulf South this February. Belly of the Beast Earth First wants you to put on those action socks and grab a flotation device. The swamps are calling. See you there. Once again, that is the Earth First Winter Rendezvous, February 23rd through the 26th in southern Mississippi. For more information, contact byobef@riseup.net. That's byobef@riseup.net, or go to bellyofthebeastef.wordpress.com. That's bellyofthebeastef.wordpress.com. And over in England, the Earth First Winter Moot will be occurring at roughly the same time, February 23rd through the 25th. All are warmly welcomed to a weekend of workshops, campaign updates, networking, planning, solidarity, and socializing on the front lines of ecological resistance in the United Kingdom. The event starts at 6 p.m. on the 23rd for an evening meal, and the event will wind up 4 p.m. on Sunday. The address is the Regather Cooperative, 57 through 59 Club Garden Road in Sheffield, and S118BU, if that means anything to you. If you want further information, go to regather.net. Bring a sleeping bag and a crash mat. I suppose that means an air mattress. There are opportunities to stay locally in homes of community activists. Email a request to site@earthfirstgathering.org. That's site@earthfirstgathering.org. There is a requested donation of 25 to 30 pounds. Remember, it's the United Kingdom, including vegan meals and accommodation. Again, more information at www.earthfirstgathering.org. And this note from Save the Matoles Ancient Forest. This last weekend's action training camp at the Matole River Watershed exceeded expectations, with over 40 people attending workshops on tripod blockades, tree climbing, herbal first aid and medic skills, logging, monitoring, and tons more. So it's a good thing they had a good time up there in the Matole. If you want more information about them, go to Save the Matole Ancient Forest at Facebook.com. And in Poland, forest defenders have been acquitted after a blockade from this story from Save Białowieża, as found on the Earth First Newswire. First victory in court, they say. A court in Hajnowka passed a judgment today acquitting the activists who, on the 8th of June of last year, blocked heavy equipment, including a harvester and a forwarder used for felling the forest. It was decided that the defendants had acted in a state of need. A few weeks ago, the very same court in Hajnowka pronounced other activists taking part in the same protests guilty. On the 8th of June 2017, a group of activists blockaded two pieces of heavy equipment, a harvester and a forwarder, which in the days prior to the protest were used to cut thousands of trees under protection of 100-year-old stands in Hajnowka State Forest District. Eight men and women, Anna, and I'm not going to read them all, the names are too hard to pronounce, were acquitted for their acts. Paradoxically, another judge from the same court in Hajnowka found the very same persons from the very same protests guilty a few weeks before. According to the argumentation presented by the judge, the people blocking the machines were acting in a state of high need, wanting to prevent the danger in which the Białowieża forest was at. The defendants could not be seen as guilty of the acts they were charged with, as they stood in defense of the public good at the cost of the work of machine operators. In the case, the value of the goods saved, the natural assets of the Białowieża forest, was significantly higher than the value of the man days of machine operators. The judge compared the activities of the defendants to a situation of extinguishing a fire. Activists from the camp in the Białowieża Forest have taken part in some 100 actions and blockades, for which they are now taken to court. There are dozens of criminal and civil suits filed by state forests for the losses caused by blocking the illegal cutting of the Białowieża Forest. And a hunt saboteur has been critically injured in United Kingdom in a premeditated attack, in this story from the Hunt Saboteurs Association, as found on the Earth First Newswire. A hunt saboteur is in critical condition after being punched to the ground and ridden down by a horse by members of the Dart Vale and South Pool Harriers. The huntsman from the hunt was present and involved in the attack. Cameras and radios were stolen during the attack. Saboteurs had been following the hunt when a small group of three were lured into a premeditated attack. The injured sab was punched to the ground before being ridden over by one of the hunt's horses. The sab is currently in the hospital undergoing a CT scan and repeatedly lost consciousness after the attack. He has a horse's hoof print on his head. Devon and Cornwall police are investigating the attack after being called by other members of the group whilst the attack was taking place. Lee Moon, spokesperson for the Hunt Saboteur Association, stated, Quote, this was clearly a premeditated attack by a hunt that have been put under increasing pressure by South Devon animal rights. Unable to kill with impunity, they are taking out their frustrations on those that stop them. We hope the Devon and Cornwall police carry out a thorough investigation, but given their usual pro-hunt bias, we won't hold our breath. And in Germany, an RWE compound has been sabotaged in this story from the Earth First Newswire. On the 4th of January in the Humbacher Forest, 2018 has begun. RWE are smashed, reads the release. We are a group of autonomous anarchists. We are nature defending itself, acting to protect the Humbacher Forest and the world from RWE and capitalism. In this action, an area of RWE was destroyed. The area was previously part of the forest. RWE cut all of the trees, destroying the habitat of the living beings, built new structures, fenced it off, and observed it with cameras. These structures would help them to destroy the rest of the 226 acres of the 12,000-year-old forest, which was originally 5,500 acres, for their profit, mining lignite and brown coal, which produced 90 million tons of carbon dioxide per year. The area was fenced with infrared cameras and alarm systems that guarded it. In it were material containers and a generator. As partially readable in the police report, the fences were removed and the generator destroyed. Also, attention was given to the containers. This area was opened by us again and given back to the forest. The material they used to kill the forest is now being used to protect the forest. The structures inside are no longer available to RWE, so they cannot use them to destroy the forest further. We left messages for RWE expressing our feelings towards them. As RWE cut trees in the Hambacher Forest outside the winter cutting season, it shows that they do not care about the law any more than we do. We do not want them to claim this area of mutilated forest for themselves and will make it as difficult as possible for RWE to build new structures here or anywhere else in the Hambacher Forest. This is just the start of the fight back for 2018. The resistance will really be more intense now and will escalate to be even worse if there are any evictions. It was said before the cutting season that no tree will be cut for free. The more they cut, the more expensive it will be. The same for evictions. Therefore, it would be better for RWE if they shut down their mine now and left the forest. Happy New Year! Bison have escaped a quarantine facility in Yellowstone National Park. The Buffalo Field campaign and tribal members respond in this story from Native News Online, as found in the Earth First Newswire. 52 bison have escaped a recently converted quarantine facility inside Yellowstone National Park's Stevens Creek Bison Trap. News articles about the escaped buffalo started appearing Tuesday evening. Even though Yellowstone's proposed 50-year quarantine plan has not yet been approved, Yellowstone initiated capture for quarantine beginning in 2016 at their Stevens Creek trap. The first group of 24 buffalo have been in quarantine pens since March of 2016, while the other group of 28 buffalo have been held there since March of 2017. All of the female buffalo who had been part of the capture for quarantine were shipped to slaughter last year when Yellowstone opened the trap to begin slaughter operations. All of the buffalo who remained in the then unapproved quarantine facility were bulls. Seven of these bulls have been shipped to slaughter or have died due to human handling. I think that this provides proof that we as a tribe could do a better job of managing these bison than the state of Montana and the Park Service, said Fort Peck Tribal Chairman Floyd Azure. Interior Secretary Zinke claims that Yellowstone is just days away from sending these buffalo, all bulls, to the Fort Peck, Assiniboine, and Sioux tribes. However, none of the news stories that have been released include commentary from those affected tribes. During a phone conversation, Fort Peck Tribal Chairman Floyd Azure told Buffalo Field Campaign that the Interior Secretary Zinke's disclosure that we are within days of actually moving the buffalo was news to him. Yellowstone contradicts themselves in another quote stating the buffalo were being held for possible quarantine. No quarantine plan has yet been approved. However, last year, after promises by state and federal agencies that Fort Peck could quarantine buffalo on their reservation, they built a $500,000 facility. The Montana Department of Livestock and USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service then went back on their word to the tribes by telling them that they could not receive buffalo for quarantine because their reservation is outside of Montana's brucellosis-designated surveillance area. during another phone conversation Buffalo Field campaign had with Tom McDonald, the division manager for the Confederated Salish and Kootenai Tribes Fish, Wildlife, Recreation, and Conservation Division, who was also a decision maker within the interagency bison management plan, was also unaware of Yellowstone's claim that these bison were about to go to Fort Peck. "That's old news to me," McDonald said. "I don't know that they were getting ready, and obviously Fort Peck didn't either," said Tom McDonald, division manager. James Holtnez Pierce, tribal member who also serves on the Buffalo Field Campaign's board of directors, said, "Buffalo Field Campaign does not support the deviation from adopted protocols by federal officials in the IMBP process. It is the policy of the Buffalo Field Campaign to support treaty tribes in their reserved hunting rights. Based on statements by the Secretary, we believe it is time for a meaningful consultation with treaty tribes regarding this new development and quarantine use at the trap and potential impacts to treaty resources. Buffalo Field Campaign and our supporters also seek clarity on the statements made by the Secretary on the disposition of Yellowstone's Stephen Creek trap as it relates to wild bison. Buffalo Field Campaign's primary concern has always been protecting wild migratory buffalo in the landscape. The destruction of the trap fence only highlights the deadlock inherent in the current IBMP priorities. It is time to embrace a renewed focus on wild bison as our national mammal while honoring treaty reserved hunting rights." And here is the Buffalo Field Campaign's update from the field for this week. "I keep having visions of this dream that came to me the other night and will not leave me. A 2-year-old female buffalo stares at me with sad, questioning look in her eyes as 10 orphaned yearlings, who she is now responsible for caring for, scamper around in confused circles because they have lost their mothers, brothers, sisters, aunts, and grandmothers to hunters who don't seem to care that the central herd is quickly diminishing. As Yellowstone officials cry about 52 bull buffalo who have once again found freedom after escaping Yellowstone's Stevens Creek quarantine's pens, as you heard in the previous story, the imperiled central herd continues to be targeted by hunters, and none of the bison managers are batting an eye. It was a long and rough weekend for buffalo here in the Hebgen Basin, whose death toll is rapidly rising. No buffalo have yet migrated into the Gardner Basin, so the central herd over here continues to bear the brunt of the hunt. For a few days at least, the groups of buffalo, upwards of 80 individuals, had found shelter on the Galanis property, which is Montana's largest safe zone, but is also adjacent to Gallatin National Forest, public land where buffalo can be hunted. Over the weekend, a group of hunters was sitting on the boundary of the Galanises, eyeing the buffalo and just waiting for them to cross over. The hunters had no luck that day, but everything changed the next day. The same hunters, along with additional hunt parties totaling at least 20 people, returned to the edge of the Galanis property boundary, watching buffalo who were getting perilously close to the public land. The buffalo weren't budging. We had eyes on them and the hunters and started to see hunters coming down the hill towards the water where the buffalo were. We could see that some of the hunters had their GPS gadgets out, but we were certain that they were trespassing. We immediately contacted our local Forest Service law enforcement officer, and he had been watching the scene from afar and was already on his way out there. Then we started hearing gunshots. We couldn't believe it. This could not be happening. Not only were we sure they were trespassing, but they were starting to shoot buffalo. Law enforcement arrived at the scene, and he too got his GPS device out. What we then learned was hugely disappointing. A small corner of the public land cuts into a section of the Galanis property. The hunters were very close to the property line, but unfortunately they were on legal territory. 9 buffalo were killed that day. Correction, 10 buffalo were killed that day. A hunter shot an adult female who then ran into the Galanis property. Law enforcement suspected this had happened and got permission to access the property the following morning. They found the buffalo dead. By the end of the day, the majority of those buffalo headed into obvious areas of public land. We were extremely worried that more hunters would arrive and take more of these central herd members. We had patrols out first thing the following morning to look for them, but they had already moved east over Horse Butte, we hoped, heading to the safety of the park. It had been under cover of darkness, they would have made it back alive, but they traveled in the day along the northwest bluffs of the Madison River, which is also part of Gallatin National Forest. By the end of the day, 7 more buffalo had been killed. The rest of that group thankfully did make it back into the park. The following day, patrols did a recon into the park and found them deeper within the shelter of those lands where they are choosing to stay for now. And in France, ZAD declares victory as the airport plan is dropped in this story from Freedom News. In a communique, the famous horizontal community Zone à Défendre has declared a historic victory and called for expropriated peasants and inhabitants to be able to fully recover their rights as soon as possible. The entirety of the land area developed to the airport project, 1,650 hectares, around 3,000 acres of land, is declared as being of a public utility in 2008, currently belongs to the state, with the exception of three roads crossing it. The ZAD has argued that this land should be kept in public hands and rather than turned into an airport, put in the forms of public lease for the benefit of the community and wildlife. Responding to reports that the Notre-Dame-des-Landes airport project is now officially dead, representatives for the 10-year-old environmental occupation campaign wrote, "This afternoon, the government has just announced the abandonment of the project. We note that the declaration of public utility will not officially be extended. The project is definitely null and void on February 8th. This is a historic victory against a destructive development project. This has been possible thanks to a long movement as determined as it is varied. And we would like to thank all of those who have mobilized against this airport project over the last 50 years. And an endangered Bornean orangutan has been stabbed in Indonesia. A Bornean orangutan, a critically endangered species, has been found stabbed to death in Indonesia's central Kalimantan province, a conservation official said on Tuesday. Authorities said the case was the latest in a string of unnatural deaths of orangutans on the island to which they are native. The great ape was found floating in a river and had been dead for at least 2 days, said Abib Gawan, head of the Natural Resources Conservation Agency in central Kalimantan. "We found that it was stabbed multiple times using a sharp tool," Gunawan told Reuters. "We are still investigating the case." The World Wildlife Fund estimates that there are 104,700 Bornean orangutans known for their broad faces and dark brown fur left in the world. Last year, two orangutans had been killed, were discovered in East Kalimantan, media have said. Indonesia has vast swaths of plantations growing palm oil or coffee on deforested land that conservationists say often encroach or disrupt ecosystems. Plantation workers sometimes encounter wildlife and may kill or capture those animals. And this story from Reuters. And also from Reuters, Norway will ban fur farms as fox and mink go out of fashion. A plan by Norway's government to phase out fur farms by 2025 dismayed producers and delighted animal rights activists on Monday as a sign that fur is out of fashion even in a nation that was once the world's top producer of fox pelts. Conservative Prime Minister Erna Solberg's government agreed to shut fox and mink farms that produce about 1 million pelts a year as part of a deal on Sunday to broaden her two-party minority government by adding the anti-fur liberal party. "We're shocked, shaken to the core," said Guri Wormdal of the Norwegian Fur Breeders Association. She said that about 200 fur farms in Norway employing 400 people under strict rules for animal welfare, with an annual turnover of 350 to 500 million Norwegian crowns, roughly $45 to $60 million. Animal group NOAA hailed the decision as part of a shift against what it views as an outdated and cruel business with dwindling appeal for fashion-conscious consumers. "We're very pleased," NOAA leader Siri Martinsen said, adding the plan seems sure of majority support in Norway's parliament. And also from Reuters, Brazil has seized over 400 containers in a fight against illegal logging. Police in Brazil have seized 444 containers in an investigation into illegal logging in the country's vast Amazon, federal authorities said on Thursday, as the nation seeks to cut down on the widespread practice. The seizures are part of an investigation taking place at ports in the Brazilian riverside city of Manaus, a key transshipment point for illegal timber, police said in a statement. Police have inspected only one-fifth of the containers so far. They were found to contain logs that, if laid in a line, would stretch for 1,500 kilometers, almost 1,000 miles, police said. About half the logs were bound for export to the United States or Europe, they added. The Amazon, which is located in Brazil, is the world's largest tropical rainforest and soaks up vast amounts of carbon dioxide. Brazil's efforts to protect the forest, which experts say is important to curbing global warming, have been mixed in recent years. In October, the government's environment ministry said the overall Amazon deforestation fell 16% for the year through July 2017. However, that was the first drop in 3 years. Reuters reporters Graham Slattery wrote the story, and editing by Adrian Croft. And what caused 200,000 saigas to die? This story by Brian Nelson from Mother Nature Network. The saiga antelope, an ice age relic, once roamed alongside woolly mammoths and saber-toothed tigers. Today, the population of this ancient species is in collapse. In just a 15-year period, their numbers have dropped by 95%, which represents the sharpest collapse for any mammal species ever recorded. Poaching and habitat loss are historically the main culprits, but in 2015, a new scourge arrived, a bacteria that has wiped out more than 200,000 saiga in a matter of weeks, nearly half of the remaining worldwide population. It is difficult to comprehend the loss that this species has suffered in such a short time. Apocalyptic is not too strong a word. You went from one or two animals within 3 or 4 days to thousands, Richard Cook, a professor at the Royal Veterinary College, told NPR, and then they were all dead by the seventh day. Scientists revealed the deadly saigas suffered from a bacterial disease, hemorrhagic septicemia, caused by Pasteurella multocida type B bacteria. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening at 9 o'clock here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org. You can tune in tomorrow afternoon, that's Friday at 3 p.m., for a rebroadcast as part of our Environment Friday programming. Or you could tune in to one of the following stations, WMNB 107.1 in North Adams, Massachusetts, Friday at 5:30 in the morning, KRFP 90.3 in Moscow, Idaho, Wednesdays at 3 p.m., KOWA 106.5 in Olympia, Washington, Saturdays at 7 a.m., WLSL 92.7 in Dade City, Florida, Sundays at noon, or KHCF 89.9 in Morgan Hill, Gilroy, California, KGIG 104.9 in Modesto, California, KPHD 93.3 in Modesto, California, or Berkeley Liberation Radio at 104.1 in Berkeley, California. All carry the Earth First Update. Or you could go online to the Grateful Dread Public Radio Station online at GDPRRevolution99.com. That's GDPRRevolution99.com, Sundays at 2 a.m. Central Time. Or you could always go to RadioForAll.net, where you can listen online or download this or any previous Earth First Update. That's Radio4All.net. And please ask your local nonprofit community radio station to air the Earth First Update. Every week it is free to download and broadcast. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and produced at the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Uncle Dennis. I want to thank you for tuning in, and please do so again next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.